I won't ask the next question. Of those of you that have received it, how many read it? I won't ask it. But if you do have time, we all have busy lives. It's a very wonderful book. That's why we selected it. And you'll probably get more if you read the book in addition to hearing what's in the book, than just hearing what's in the book. It's a really skinny book. Really skinny. And with that, we'll begin. We'll start with the author. The author is Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. And for those of you that are not familiar with who he is, one of the two principal commentators of Bhagavad Gita that Srila Prabhupada drew from, Baladeva Vidyabhusan and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he quotes them and referred to them regularly when compiling his commentary. There were other commentaries that he made reference to, but those in particular. And here's where you find him in our disciplic succession. Of course, we didn't go all the way back, but Madhavendra Puri's spiritual master was Lakshmipati Tirtha. Then Ishwar Puri, Lord Chaitanya's spiritual master, who had other disciples, Madhavendra Puri, Nityananda, and Advaita Acharya. Lord Chaitanya, Rupa Goswami, Raghunath Das Goswami, contemporary with Jiva Goswami, Krishna Das Kaviraj. We'll hear his name again as we go along. And Krishna Das Kaviraj gave training to Narottam Das Thakur some generations past, actually, then Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, who instructed Baladeva Vidyabhusan, contemporary with him with Jagannath Das Babaji, who goes on our altar commonly, and then Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Gaurakishore, Bhaktisiddhanta, and Prabhupada. So commonly these last five are shown on our ISKCON altars. The one immediately preceding was Vishwanath. And he was historically, something that you don't see in between Narottam Das Thakur and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, there are about four or five generations of acharyas that were less prominent, but they were in the diksha line. They were there, but not humongously prominent in the line. And so this list is a list that Bhaktisiddhanta generated, which Srila Prabhupada utilized, because he was so prominent. Now, something that's very special about Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is, after four or five generations, not just decades, but generations of spiritual masters initiating disciples, then that disciple becoming spiritual master, and so forth, five generations of not having someone very prominent is very significant. Now, these, Rupa, Raghunath, Krishna Das, they resided in Vrindavan after Lord Chaitanya departed. And Narottam Das Thakur was trained under Jiva Goswami, and then he traveled and was on the eastern part of India, largely in Utkal or Odisha. And so all those several generations means the prominence of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings in the world had gone down. Not lost, down. And when Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur went to Vrindavan, it was hard to find. And he restored it in a very prominent very dynamic, very powerful way. It was heroic accomplishment. And he in turn trained Baladev, who wrote the commentary in Vedanta Sutra for the Gaudiya line, and many other things. So his function in the disciplic succession was very important. Very important. He wrote a number of books. It's one of the main contributions. Commentaries, largely Srimad Bhagavatam. Every verse in the whole 10th canto, that's the title. Commentary on Bhagavad Gita. Ananda Vrindavan Champu. Rupa Goswami's Vidagta Madhava, Ujjwala Nilamani, Gopal Tapani Upanishad. That's one of the Upanishads that's very clear about the role of Krishna. Not just referring to the absolute truth as Tat, as a pronoun, but Krishna. And Chaitanya Charitamrita. No. He wrote a commentary on the entire Chaitanya Charitamrita. We'll go back. He heard Chaitanya Charitamrita from Krishna Das. He was in his line, excuse me, he didn't hear from him because there was all these years, but he studied and studied and studied and studied and studied. So, he was writing his commentary of Chaitanya Charitamrita, and when he was writing this book that's in different colored letter, Mantrartha Deepika, he came across a section of Chaitanya Charitamrita. This is to give you a picture of his character. Where Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami is describing the Gayatri mantras given in the Chaitanya line. Krishnadas doesn't say what the mantra is, but he calls it Kama Gayatri. And he says it's comprised of 24 and a half syllables. And each of those syllables marks a moon that is an indication of the form of Krishna's body, the Kama Gayatri mantra. So he, Vishwanath, being the scholar, had never heard of such a thing as a half a syllable. But he had all faith in Krishnadas that he was, you know, a perfectly realized and perfectly transparent representative of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who initiated followers in this Kama Gayatri. In fact, Lord Brahma received Kama Gayatri from Krishna himself, Krishna's flute. It's right in Brahma Samhita. So he was pondering, not kind of speculating, but pondering deeply, what was the intention? Why would Krishna Das Kaviraj say 24 and a half? So he studied writings and he studied different Sanskrit grammatical rules and he couldn't understand. And he was so persistent, feeling, if I cannot receive the message from Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami, who is revealing the character of immortality of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, then of what use am I? What use is my life? He really got into this mood very deeply, and he decided just to give up his life. So he decided he would fast till death by the side of Radha Kund. And it went on for days, fasting and praying and chanting. And one night, when he dozed off and fell asleep, Radharani appeared in his dream and instructed him. Vishwanath, don't be distressed like this. You're right that Krishna Das made no mistake. Radharani instructed him in the dream. He is one of my dearmost associates, and he knows my inner heart and all the purposes of my life. And the specific 24 and a half syllable comes from a certain dictionary. She gave the name of the dictionary, Sanskrit Grammatical Dictionary. You'll go to the library and you'll find it. That's where Krishna Das received, because Krishna Das wrote it by the side of Radhakund. Go there in the morning and you'll find it. You'll have an answer. And after reading it, take my blessings and you write a commentary on Kama Gayatri. So he woke up in ecstasy. It is said he was already a very profound Rasika Bhakta, tasting the mellows of bhakti. And now he felt he had somehow received Radharani's mercy. And so he went in the morning, found exact reference in this particular reference book, and wrote a commentary, Mantrartha Deepika, explaining Kama Gayatri, one of the Gayatri mantras that Krishna gave to Brahma and is in our disciplic succession. It gives you some idea. So here's this book, Madhurya Kadambini, and its sequel, Aishwarya Kadambini. So this prolific and very important author and member of our disciplic succession. He worshipped a deity named Gokulananda. There's a Gokulananda temple in Vrindavan town. It's a very sweet little temple, but it's very, very important temple. It's not grand and ostentatious. It's removed from the main traffic area and the commercial area and where the other large temples are. Very quiet, but very important, because he liked that kind of a place. So here's the quick version of a longer story. One Brahmana, some distance away from Vrindavan, somewhere on the outskirts of Mathura, was worshipping this deity, Gokulananda, and very devotedly worshipping his deity. And one night, Gokulananda appeared to the Brahmana in his dream and said, "I want to be worshipped by Vishwanath. Go find him. He's in Vrindavan town. He's a celebrated person. Just ask for him and give me to him, because I want to be worshipped by him." The Brahmana was ecstatic and sad at the same time. Krishna just appeared in my dream. But he wants to go to be worshipped by somebody else. So whatever his desire. So he went to Vrindavan town, and he asked, and he finally found, where is Vishwanath? And when he presented the deity to Vishwanath, Vishwanath said, "How can I worship a deity? I don't even have a residence. I'm a sadhu. I don't have any possessions. I don't have any way to take care of a deity. And besides that, I'm not qualified. So I can't accept." And the Brahmana left disappointed. You know, he had instruction from Gokulananda to do something, and he couldn't fulfill the instruction. That night, Vishwanath had a dream. Gokulananda appeared and said, "The Brahman will come again tomorrow and say yes instead of no. Because I want to be worshipped by you. And you can offer whatever you have. It doesn't matter. The ingredients will come. Don't worry." And the Brahmana appeared in his, he appeared in the Brahmana's dream and said, "You know, go again." He said, "I already went." And he said, "No." He said, "Go again. He'll say yes." So he went again and he said yes. So he worshipped Gokulananda. For some time here in Vrindavan town, again, he worshipped Gokulananda by the side of Radha Kund. And then he came back and he worshipped side by side with Lokanath Goswami. Some of you have heard his name. He worshipped Radha Vinod. Another long story which I'm not going to go into because everything takes time. You want to get to the book. So he and Lokanath resided together. And Baladev Vijayabhusan Vijaya Govinda, Radha Vijaya Govinda, and the deities of Lokanath, and there's also in the front deities of Narottam Das Thakur, and the Gora of Narottam Das Thakur, a deity that was worshipped by Raghunath Das Goswami, a Govardhan Shila. Another long story which there isn't time for, but the altar is filled with history and great. In the back side of the temple, there's samadhis of all those personalities. It was a epicenter of spiritual power. So in at the temple is named after Vishwanath's deity, Gokulananda. There's some other history. And he considered himself a strict follower of Rupa Goswami. So many of his commentaries were based upon Rupa Goswami's writings and commentaries of the dramas of Rupa Goswami, etc. Of course, Rupa Goswami taught Jiva Goswami, who then in turn taught Krishna Das, and he was making his commentary on Krishna Das's Chaitanya Charitamrita. There's Rupa Goswami and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, and then his disciple Baladev Vijayabhusan. Another long story, but very, very important event in our Gaudiya line, where at last a Vedanta Sutra commentary was generated. Govinda Bhasya, instructed by Vishwanath how to do so, all the elements and details. So English translation of Madhurya Kandambani is here, a cloud bank of nectar. And that's our subject for this visit. This topic is the stages of bhakti. There's 9. And they go all the way from Shraddha to Prema. If you start to read the book, you'll find out all about it. So we're going to, this evening, cover chapter 1 quickly. And he calls it the first shower of nectar, Madhurya Kandambani. And the topic of this chapter 1 is the super excellence of bhakti. So he does it in a Mangalacharana manner, that is to say, he offers his prayers to Krishna, and he makes references to the Upanishads and the Shruti mantras, etc., to the foundation of establishing what he's going to write about. That is, Krishna Supreme. It goes like this. Krishna Supreme, and he's totally independent. Everyone and everything is dependent upon him, because he's the only totally independent one. Bhakti is as independent as he is, because bhakti is his internal potency. Bhakti Devi is an expansion of Radha, who is equally independent as Krishna is independent, meaning not materially dependent by any cause. So there's a series of Mangalacharna prayers. And then he begins the philosophy part. Of course, his reader is a devotee audience, but devotees need to know what's the Shruti basis for our bhakti process. So he does it this way. It's a reference found directly in our Bhagavad Gita. Maybe some of you recognize who've studied Bhagavad Gita. Brahma Pucham Pratishtha. Brahman is the origin of everything. It's found in the purport of Bhagavad Gita, chapter 13. You may remember, if you read it, Anamoya, Pranamoya, Gyanavivigyanamoya, and Anandamoya. Those are five stages of realization of the Absolute Truth. The final stage being the Anandamaya stage. I'm not going to go through them. It's very simple, very, very commonsensical. First realizing the Absolute Truth in the form of grains, and then distinguishing food from life air, and distinguishing life air from knowledge, and knowledge from realized knowledge, and the perfect stages, our relationship with the source of everything. One experiences that through that medium, the realization of ananda, an aspect of the Absolute Truth, his personal feature. You can read, it's a little more detail in the Bhagavad Gita, and far more detail in his writings, Vishwanath's writings. He makes another reference from Taittiriya Upanishad, which is also referenced in the next chapter of Bhagavad Gita, chapter 14. Raso Vai Saha. Anyone that's heard Prabhupada's reported lectures is very familiar with hearing that. I'm very familiar with hearing that. Raso Vai Saha. It's from the Taittiriya Upanishad. The Absolute Truth, Saha, is Rasa. And when you experience that, which is the source of everything, rasa, one experiences blissfulness through that connection with Krishna, the source of everything, who is rasa. So here's Vishwanath's translation, and you can read some more in Bhagavad Gita. When one understands the personality of Godhead, the reservoir of pleasure, Krishna, he, that's the one who realizes and understands, becomes transcendentally blissful. So there is the Absolute Truth realized in these different features. When this final feature comes, one feels blissful. And that's because of the connection with the source of everything, who is the Swarup, or the form of Rasa. So it's step by step by step taking one to Krishna in his spiritual form, and his spiritual form is filled with rasa. He is rasa. He is rasa swarup. And then he makes a Bhagavatam reference. So that was the Shruti mantra references. Now comes the Bhagavatam reference, and some of you may recognize this verse. It's chapter 43 of the 10th canto. Krishna is entering the wrestling arena of Kamsa. And when he enters the wrestling arena, many different categories of people see him, and they see him, they have different realization of him, because their perspective is what it is, and they see him as they see him, but he's one entity. So they regarded him in different ways. The wrestlers saw Krishna as a lightning bolt. The men of Mathura as the best of males. The women as Cupid in person. The cowherd men as their relative. The impious rulers as a chastiser. His parents as their child, the king of the Bhojas, Kamsa, as death, the unintelligent as the Supreme Lord's universal form, the yogis as the Absolute Truth, and the Vrishnis as their supreme worshipable deity. So one entity perceived differently according to the heart of those observers. So Krishna is moving across the wrestling arena, and there goes Paramatma walking across the wrestling arena, and there goes Virat Rupa walking across the wrestling arena, and there goes a lightning bolt, and seen in different ways. But he's reciprocating with, according to the hearts of those who viewed him, devotees and non-devotees alike. He's establishing, Vishwanath is establishing, Krishna is the source of everything, and in that spiritual perspective, rasa, the sweet taste of loving exchange. On the basis of impersonal Brahman, many of you know this final verse of chapter 14, then he, as Krishna is fully independent and the source of everything, bhakti is equally independent as Krishna is. And bhakti manifests independently, independent of any material cause. So he enters into this interesting and important discussion. How does bhakti begin? And bhakti begins of bhakti's own independent will. Just like Radha as the internal potency of Krishna is as independent as Krishna is, so bhakti manifests bhakti by the will of, independent will of bhakti. So then he takes some time, this is all in this chapter one, to indicate scriptural references from Srimad Bhagavatam that there is no material cause for bhakti manifesting. Many of you are familiar with this verse, Yato Bhaktir Hoksa Jay, Ahaitukya Pratyata Yatma Supersedati. So devotional services, Ahaituki, or there's no Hetu, or there's no cause for bhakti to manifest. If there's no cause for it to manifest, then why does it manifest? That's the question. How does bhakti begin? He makes another reference, two more. 11th canto. Here's an interesting word, yadrichchaya. This is Krishna speaking to Uddhava, Uddhava Gita, 11:20. And yadrichchaya is translated somehow or other, or inexplicably, or there's no material causation. Well, come on, everything has cause and effect. So what's the cause? Come on. No cause. Somehow or other. Causeless. Mystery. It's mystery. If somehow or other one becomes attached to hearing about me, so it's hearing about Krishna is a bhakti process. Attachment to hearing about Krishna is bhakti. Not only the activity, but a mood of bhakti, and how does it happen? Well, somehow or other. Then another, in the same chapter, text 11, mad bhaktim va yadrichchaya, somehow he attains my devotional service. So, if this means you cannot point to a material cause, so he wants to get to the bottom, okay? There's no material cause. What's the cause? What's the spiritual cause? Bhakti appears by its own independent sweet will. Well, some people are not so happy with that explanation. It's not very satisfying. So they say some other things. Maybe this word yadrichchaya has a different meaning. What about this one? Well, maybe it comes by good fortune, just like voila. Some good fortune comes. Okay, what's the cause of the good fortune? Well, some people say, well, good karma, shubha karma. How's that possible? How can something material produce something spiritual? Well, then it's just the mercy of Krishna. Okay, what's the cause of the mercy of Krishna? Well, it's causeless mercy. Well, if it's causeless mercy, then everyone would be a devotee. But not everybody's a devotee. It's qualified mercy. No. Then he is guilty of partiality. We're running out of options here. And then he concludes, well, Krishna is Bhakta Vatsala, and he gives one of his characteristics is bhushanas or ornaments. And he just invests potency in his bhakta. You can give me to whoever you like. No partiality. You can give me to whoever you like. You have a license. You have a power of attorney. You can set up franchises wherever you want. There's no qualifiers. Just whatever you want. Because he's Bhakta Vatsala. It comes from Krishna's Bhakta Vatsala quality, and he invests that bhakti shakti capacity to his bhakta. Specifically, then, his Madhyama Bhakta. Unqualified mercy of a devotee doesn't compromise Krishna's being not partial. The devotees, the Madhyamas in particular, they have their, we're trying to become, we're instructed by scripture to become Madhyama Bhaktas. What does that mean? There's at the beginning stage where the people, they worship God, and God's in the place of worship. He's in the church or synagogue or temple or mosque, and you go there and you pray to God because that's where he is. Or you, if you're Muslim, you face towards Mecca, and so many times a day you bow down and say your prayers facing God because that's where he is. He's Mecca. Etc., etc. There's God, and then there's everything else. It's just a secular picture. And then that's the Madhyama. And such a person doesn't have the capacity to understand other things that are of the same spiritual quality than the place of worship, the deity or the church or the mosque, etc., the temple. They go to those places, they get very spiritual, and then they go play golf or whatever they do. And then the Madhyama is enjoined. There's these four categories. There's God and you worship him. There's the devotees of God and you make friendships with them. There's the innocent and you extend Krishna's compassion to them. And then there's Hiranyakashipus and little ones. There's the demons. We don't take close association of Hiranyakashipu and the little ones. We keep our distance from them. You know, we're instructed to do that. So the Madhyama is given this power of attorney by Krishna. You give me to whoever you like. And of course, there's these categories. The innocent and the non-devotee or the atheist, the blasphemer. So he gives to the innocent because that's what he's enjoined to do. So if the unqualified mercy of a devotee versus the mercy of the Lord in his Madhyama Bhakta. So the better answer is this one. Mercy of the Lord in his Madhyama Bhakta. The devotee is granted power to give out the Lord's own mercy, his Kripa Shakti, at his discretion. So, devotees, you got some Shakti. Maybe you don't think so. But you're authorized by Krishna to give him to others. No, you may be a dull instrument or a sharp instrument or somewhere in between, but that capacity, that empowerment is invested in you. So we want to become more transparent and sharper and a better instrument. But if the Madhyamas don't do that, the world's in trouble. The bhakti within a devotee's heart is what is given. I mean, you're speaking the message, but it's not just the message. It's the bhakti that's within your heart that's being transmitted through that sound vibration. And what is that bhakti that's within the heart? That's Bhakti Devi. Bhakti Devi. Who is Bhakti Devi? Bhakti Devi is Radharani's expansion, who is fully independent. Bhakti Devi Ki Jai, we say in our, that's what we're, you know, we're wishing her, just like Markine Bhagavad Dharma, the song that Prabhupada wrote in the Boston Harbor. We sang it during the Memorial Day weekend. Your ever well wisher, those of you that were there. If you weren't there, you could see the recording or hear it. Prabhupada is three times praying for the capacity, because he's weak and not capable, to have people understand Krishna's message, because ignorance and passion have them covered and they won't be able to understand, because the message is the message of Vasudev, Shuddha Sattva. How are they going to understand? But if you wish, you can make my words empowered so they can understand. So bhakti gives bhakti. Bhakti Devi, who is Radha's expansion, is the bhakti that's given, and there's just an instrument, the Madhyama Bhakta. Us. We're not Uttama. And, you know, we're trying to move from the Kanishtha stage to the Madhyama stage. I learned this besides these three. So you, if anyone's not familiar with these terminologies, don't get too confused. It's, you know, beginning, intermediate, advanced. That's really simple. Kanishtha, Madhyama, middle, Uttama, topmost. So the followers of Bhakti Siddhanta, they say, there's the Kanishtha, Kanishtha, Madhyama, Kanishtha, Uttama, Kanishtha. And then amongst the Madhyamas, there's the Kanishtha, Madhyama, 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 and Uttama Madhyamas. And then the division of three. So you can subdivide further if you, you know. So it's not a bucket. It's just, it's a gradation of bhakti. And a big factor, we'll hear as we go further, a big factor in the gradation of bhakti is the maturity of faith. In one place, Vishwanath says, these nine stages of bhakti, which is the topic of this book, is simply faith, 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 and faith, and faith. Nine stages. Just with different names describing the stage of evolution of that faith. And it starts with a Daushadha, preliminary faith. So that's chapter 2. But this is, how does bhakti begin? And it comes through the agency of a bhakta. Like, you know, we're moving along our life in darkness somewhere, thinking we're doing okay, or maybe not thinking we're doing okay. And somehow some devotee came along. I like seeing it like this. They have a bhakti vessel and they spilled some bhakti on us. We went, whoa. So we got bhakti-ized a little bit. And that's how it began. We maybe didn't know what the heck was going on. We just threw the agency of some devotee. And then that which is already there became awakened a little bit, and then becomes awakened a little bit, a little bit, a little bit, a little bit. But it has much less effect on those that are faithless. It's right in Bhagavad Gita several times. They'll never understand those that are faithless. They'll never understand. You can just keep pouring bhakti onto a faithless person, just like pouring water into sand is not going to do anything. But so there, a preliminary faith is needed. And what's that preliminary faith? We'll hear about it, but it's just, I know there's a higher reality. I don't know what it is, but I know there is one, and I want to know what it is. That's the preliminary faith. Not, I believe. Just, you know, it's just something exists. It's a higher order of reality. There's life, and we're doing, you know, things of life, and as best we can in a responsible, conscientious, and proper way. That's nice. That's motive goodness. And then there's a higher reality. What's that? I don't know. But I know there is one. So that much. And then comes sadhusanga, we're going to hear, because these are stages, then that I want to know element, that preliminary faith starts to go, and so forth. We hear some further. And that's the bhakti process is now begun. So bhakti gives bhakti. So Madhyama Bhakti is mandated to discriminate. Thus, the one who gives out the Lord's mercy is discriminating. But the Lord isn't discriminating. Bhaktivatsala Krishna lets his mercy flow and follow the mercy of his devotee. So devotees, be merciful, please. According to your capacity, not something artificial or imagined. During one home program somewhere, I won't say where, the host and hostess said, how do I convince people at work that, you know, they should take some interest in Bhagavad Gita and the bhakti message? And I tell them and they don't pay any attention, or worse, they just laugh because they know saying it in a direct fashion. So, this is a topic that we also covered. I'm mentioning it because it's just a little review and fresh in my mind. The from the heart message, remember that slide that was three times at the very end? When we can connect our heart, our intention, the primordial original intention that bhakti awakens, which is the intention to please Krishna, through sadhusanga, that intention and the process of bhakti itself, the intention to Krishna awakens. And if we live from that space, there's power beyond anything we can even imagine. So it's not a matter of technique. Do this, and then do that, and then the bell rings. It's not something mechanical. Is something that when we're in this bhakti space, we'll call it that, or the from the heart, when we're, as much as we can focus our lives to awaken that which is already there, the intention to please Krishna, then all kinds of things start to happen. Then are just inexplicable. The Adrishchaya thing. It may be something we do, but it's not the something that we do. It's the bhakti awakens bhakti. You just have to get out of the way. False ego, get out of the way. Become Krishna's instrument. Okay, so. Being a great acharya, he starts to dive more deeply into the topic. Bhakti is not caused by nishkam karma. unless it is a direct limb of bhakti. Now, nishkam karma is not a term that Prabhupada used much, but it is a term that Vishwanath and Baladev used a lot in their commentary. So just go through it a little bit. Karma refers in their language to prescribed duties. Not, you know, the karma of the worldly people, but the prescribed duties of followers of the Vedas. That's, you know, your duty. And there's sakam, karma yoga, and there's nishkam, karma yoga. In the beginning, people do something because they want something. And a higher stage is you do something not because you want something. It's not without fruitive intention, perform prescribed duties. Nishkam karma yoga. Yad kroshi yad asnasi yad jahosi dadasi yad. There's a classic karma yoga, nishkam karma yoga message. It's not, his message is, it's not an unga of bhakti. Excuse me. Bhakti is not caused unless it is a direct limb of bhakti. That is to say, this intention to please Krishna. No, it's right in the verse, madarpana, worship me. But some people worship because they want something. They have an expectation. And bhakti, at least in the mature stage, this is so where he goes with this. I didn't include it in the slide. But if you want some detail, you can read the book. And even further, you can read or review the discussion we had in Gita Nagari with the From the Heart, because it's that verse from Rupa Goswami's writing, Anyabhi Lasha Dushunyam. Looking around to see if people are acknowledging. It's the verse that's the essence verse of the whole nectar devotion. Anyabhi Lasha Dushunyam Jnana Karmadhyanavratam Anukoyena Krishna Rushilanam Bhakti Rutma. So the first half is secondary, not primary. It's what bhakti isn't. So nishkam is what bhakti isn't, or what prescribed duties are not. It's not with the intention to get something. But it's not, bhakti isn't caused by that, unless it's a direct limb or anga of adhikoyena krishnanushilanam. What's that? That's Krishna is to be pleased. Let's take an example, really simple one. Who's the demon? This is a quiz question. Who's the demon that Bhima bifurcated? They had a big battle. Jarasandha. Now, when Krishna and Arjuna and Bhima went to see Jarasandha, what was the manner of their attire when they went to see Jarasandha? Brahmanas. Why? Because he was known for giving charity to Brahmanas. Look, nishkam karma. It's not an anga of bhakti to give charity to Brahmanas. If you're Jarasandha. Because there's no intention to please Krishna. As an example. But it can be an anga of bhakti if it's, it can, bhakti can awaken if that intention to please Krishna is at the heart. So, really important for devotees to do our prescribed duties without attachment to the results, so that Krishna can be pleased. So, you know, whatever that is, go to work or send your kids to school or, you know, do whatever you do in your life so that Krishna is pleased. Cook for your families. One of our congregation members somewhere said, Maharaj, if this is in an assembly like this, I'm really struggling with cooking for Krishna. I said, could you explain? He said, for my whole adult life, I've been cooking for my family. Now I became a Hare Krishna devotee. Now I got to cook for Krishna. And I couldn't understand. She was taking it seriously. It wasn't just like, okay, our goal is to cook for Krishna. It's the consciousness of cooking for Krishna. It's not like cooking for my family and, oh, we'll make a little offering over there and ring a bell and now it's Krishna Prasadam. That's the consciousness of cooking for Krishna. That's bhakti. It's the difference between material and spiritual life, or pious life and spiritual life. The strength of bhakti. Bhakti is always distant from karma and jnana. That's this anyadi lasha dushanyam jnana karma jnanavritam. He's making reference to Rupa Goswami's teachings and explaining it for us. To achieve prema, the fruit of bhakti, these two paths are not required. Conversely, jnana karma and yoga depend on bhakti to achieve their results. Bhakti's independent. He's like a lawyer making a case based on scripture. Bhakti is independent. These other two are independent. Bhakti doesn't require these two. These other two require bhakti. Bhakti is independent. Bhakti is distant from jnana and karma. Bhakti doesn't depend on purity, like when you're doing a karma kunda ritual. It's got to be precise. Otherwise, you won't get the result. You get a bad result. Or even faith. Now, that's unknowingly, in the beginning, someone may take Krishna prasadam. Or someone may hear the Sankirtan party. And their spiritual life has begun. Unknowingly. They wouldn't like, hey, let's go begin spiritual life today. It can begin even unknowingly. Or Ajamila. He gives the reference of Ajamila. He wasn't, Narayana. He was calling his son. Wasn't knowingly. Even unknowingly. And then he concludes the same message as we discussed. Same message as we discussed in Gita Nagari, this from the heart. It's already there. Nitya Siddha, Krishna Prema, who knows the verse? Satya Kamunoi, Shravanadi, Shuddha Chitte, Kariya Yudoi. Lord Chaitanya's teaching, right in Chaitanya Charitamrita, commentary by Vishwanath. Now, in his own composition, he's saying the same thing. Bhakti's already there. You don't have to import it. You don't have to worry about Trump's tariffs. It doesn't have to be imported. It's already there. It just has to be awakened. And the process of awakening, Shravanadi, Shuddha Chitte, beginning with Shravana, and then the rest. Shravana, Kirtana, Vishnu, Smarana, etc. So what we're doing right now is Shravana. And that's how bhakti is awakened. It's already there. Naturally. So, this is now the conclusion of the chapter. He makes reference to Rupa and Sanatan. He's following in their footsteps and wishes to make clear what these nine stages of bhakti are, which is part of Rupa Goswami's writings. And it's found in Chaitanya Charitamrita. He wrote a whole book on just a little section of Chaitanya Charitamrita for the benefit of the reader. One of the translations of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's book was Krishna, named Krishna Das, not the same, the author of Chaitanya Charitamrita. And here's something he wrote. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has benedicted the whole world by writing Madhurya Kandamani. In reality, Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the speaker of this book. He has spoken it through the mouth of Sri Chakravarti. Some people say that Sri Chakravarti Thakur is an incarnation of Srila Rupa Goswami. He is very expert in the art of describing extremely complex truths in an easily understandable manner. Oh, ocean of mercy, Sri Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, I am a great fool. Kindly reveal the mystery of your transcendental qualities in my heart. This is my prayer at your lotus feet. From Rupa Goswami's writings, here's the 9 stages, and we're going to touch on this starting tomorrow, or whenever the next class is. Shraddha is the first. Sadhu Sangha, number 2. And in the association of sadhus, we do bhajan. And as we do bhajan, the impurities of the heart become cleansed. That's 4. Gradually, this Nartan Vritti stage takes a really long time. Nishtha is when the anarthas are nearly eradicated. Still some residual something, but steadiness of bhakti is there. Nishtha. Taste, attachment, ecstasy, and the final 9th stage, prema. So the chapters will cover all these. We're probably not going to have enough sessions to cover all these. But you can read the book. You just have to ask for a copy. And then open up your computer and read it. Okay, so we're done. For chapter 1, little introduction to Vishwanath, the book itself, and how he introduces the topic. Bhakti is independent. Bhakti awakens through the agency of bhakti. Bhakti being invested, empowered specifically in the Madhyama Bhakta. And there's secondary and primary aspects. The secondary aspects themselves don't create bhakti. But bhakti creates bhakti. And this bhakti essence is an intention to please Krishna, and it's already there. And it's to be awakened by association of bhaktas, and then devotional practices, etc. And then some stages of bhakti unfold. So that was how bhakti begins. So we've all begun bhakti, now we have an understanding of how it began. From our great authority, Vishwanath. See if there's any discussion. Right next to you, to your left. To your left.
Hare Krishna Maharaj?
Yes.
Thank you very much for, you know, so nicely explaining such a difficult to understand topic. It's interesting that he did not use the word sukruti in the explanation. But what I understand from here is sukruti itself is when you are getting that drops of bhakti on yourself.
Yes. I'll elaborate. If you would finish your question.
Sure. So I wanted to understand more about sukruti.
Okay.
And also understand that bhakti is independent to begin, but to continue is...
Same, also independent. Bhakti doesn't stop being independent.
Yeah.
It's totally independent. It's Radharani. Mercy of Radharani. Is she dependent or independent? So, it continues. So we want Radha's mercy. We want the mercy of the Vaishnavas who carry Radha's mercy. Something that may be helpful, because you want to hear something more about Sukriti. Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains there's different categories of Sukriti. Bhog, Anmukhi Sukriti, pious deeds. He, classic from the Vedas is digging wells, planting roads, trees by the side of the road. For obvious reasons, beneficial to others, and you do some pious work and you get Sukriti. Material Sukriti. Then there's Moksha Anmukhi Sukriti. Now some people may do, it's knowingly they do plant trees, but it comes with you know you don't know. And so Anmukhi, unknowingly. So the example is given by Bhaktivinoda Thakur of studying a Vedanta Sutra and specifically focusing on Brahman, trying to understand Brahman. Leads to, there's some potency there that leads to Sayuja Mukti, or it can lead one to that stage. There's a potency there. And then Bhakti, Anmukhi Sukriti, is one who unknowingly engages in some devotional service, like what was already mentioned. Take prasadam, go to your workplace, and, or work at wherever. The city I was just in, we had some mahaprasadam in the car. You know, one of those scenes becoming more prominent these days must be lucrative. People at every corner now, for many corners, for, you know, little signs saying. So we gave him some prasadam. Now, he doesn't know it's Krishna prasadam, but his spiritual life has begun. And et cetera. So the unknowing and unknowing, Bhaktivinoda explains, the unknowing and unknowing and unknowing, unknowingly engaging in devotional service, accumulates to the point where one may then knowingly engage in devotional service. Not like, say, you know, what's the prasadam you got today? But, you know, they know that it's prasadam. They know that it's Krishna. And willingly are they eager when it's Krishna. So maybe, you know, anyway, maybe they eat it because it tastes good. Maybe it's called, you give it the name prasadam, so we, you know, let's give me some of that tastes good stuff. We'll call it prasadam, no problem. But connecting with Krishna knowingly, the unknowingly accumulates to the stage where one may knowingly. And the cleansing of the covering so that what's inside that's already innate in the hair becomes more prominent. Kind of like our mechanical chanting may help us to get to the point where we go beyond mechanical chanting. It's not because it's mechanical we should stop, because it's just mechanical. We don't know the fullness of what it is that we're doing. We just don't know. We're so covered. We've heard, but still the light hasn't gone on. Okay. Sukriti. Stages. Yeah?
Hare Krishna Maharaj. So in relation to that, I mean, once bhakti begins, for it to grow, there are rules and regulations one has to follow.
Yeah.
So I mean, it looks like there is a dependence there again. So.
Bhakti isn't dependent upon the rules and regulations. Bhakti is independent. Our conscious, just like there's this wonderful verse that has like a 8 or 9 page purport that follows this verse, where Lord Chaitanya is explaining, same, that the holy name is independent. The holy name is not dependent upon anything because in Vedic procedures, before one receives mantra, there's a Purushcharya Vidhi. There's procedures to prepare oneself to receive mantra. And he said, one can chant the holy name without Purushcharya Vidhi or anything. Then, even Diksha, to achieve perfection, because the holy name is independent. The holy name is Krishna. And a long purport where, keeping it really simple, if you're on the stage of Shukadeva Goswami, he didn't receive Diksha. He didn't do any vidhis, Purushcharya vidhis. He achieved perfection. And for the rest of us, it's helpful. It's more than helpful. We need all help we can get. And it's to help qualify the heart inside. It's not the name or bhakti is dependent. We're covered. And it's our submission. It's not the activity itself. It's submission to Krishna in the form of his Vedic teaching. It's not just the mechanics of it. Now, within the mechanics of it, even there's potency, but that's not independent. It's like this whole argument that he's made. To the degree that bhakti is involved and mixed, then it's effective. And standing alone, it isn't going to take you anywhere, the vidhis. Right. But with the right regard, the bhakti regard, the vidhis will help me qualify myself to be in Krishna's presence in a purified state. And therefore, I'm regarding those vidhis in the right mood, in the right manner. It's the bhakti, if not the vidhis. I'm thinking of two other ways of saying the same thing, but I think I don't need to do that. I'll do one of the two of them. One of them is, there is this, I had this discussion recently. Someone was saying, over here it says, there's no need to make any independent arrangement for the qualities of devotee, you just engage in bhakti, and the qualities of devotee you come. And over here, we cultivate qualities. So, is it A or B? And don't tell me it's both. Because I got a binary processor up here called my mind. And it's either A or B. So, the answer is that it's, my expression is, it's the horse that pulls the cart. So the horse is pleasing Krishna. That's this intention to please Krishna. That's bhakti. That's at the heart of bhakti. Now I want to, as that becomes awakened, what do I want? I want to please Krishna. So something that pleases Krishna is this. Let me strive for this because it will please Krishna. Not independently. Get rid of the bad stuff and do the good stuff. That's karma. Yama and niyama. There's still yamas and niyamas, but the essence is to please Krishna. We don't trash the yamas and niyamas. We don't trash the striving for truthfulness or cleanliness or simplicity or any of the other qualities of goodness. We strive for them, but not just because they're good. Simply to make an offering to Krishna will, he'll smile. He'll be pleased. He'll be pleased by your effort, which is people, you know, and he'll decorate the quality. He's got a big quality warehouse upstairs. No problem.
So by pleasing Krishna, in that way the bhakti grows. Hmm.
Yes, that is the essence of bhakti, by pleasing Krishna. So, and the vidhi, to see that we're striving, not so, that, so the vidhi, there's those that aren't regulated. There are those that are regulated. It's a Bhagavad Gita lesson. And then those that are following the regulations to get something. There's those that are following the regulations not to get something. There's those that are following the regulations to please Krishna, to get closer to Krishna, and to please Him ultimately. And, you know, we're at different stages, and we kind of, you know, little vacillation even throughout the course of the day, we'll just speak of a week or a year. But the Bhakti principle is the animating, independent principle. And there are things that will help us get to strengthen the Bhakti factor in our heart. But they're not standalone. They're not independent. Okay.
Mm-hmm. What is, in that slide where Bhagavatam reference, unintelligent person will see Krishna as a universal form. Can you just shed some light on it?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's pretty simple. The structure of Bhagavatam, that's the first topic Shukadeva Goswami speaks about. Canto 1, Chapter 2, Virat Rupa. And the way that Prabhupada explains it is, for those that don't have a conception of a personal feature of God, a beginning of a personal feature of God picture is things that they can see with their senses and see God there. The hills are stacks of bones. The sun and the moon are his two eyes. The rivers are his veins. The trees are his hairs. It's imaginary. But it's to help form a personal conception for those that don't have one. Now, exactly what the persons have saw him as a perambulatory universal form, I don't know what they were seeing. But what is it? It's a preliminary stage. Duryodhana saw a partial manifestation of the universal form, right, in the royal assembly, right? And everyone was astonished, except he was like, you know, he's got some mystic power. Big deal. So it's an actual form. The universal form is an actual form. But temporary. And so, a form of the universe. And in the form of Krishna is not temporary. But the universe is. But the universe has no independent existence from the energetic. That's a mystery. But that's what the universal form is. Okay, we're ready for part two tomorrow. So we'll ask again, those of you who you want to take their name, or you want to stand up and take their picture, or you want them to have them come and speak to you, then just that's good enough. Okay. So if whoever would like and has not yet received a copy of this Madhura, there's different translations of it as well, but one is available. And he'll send you, just see Bhakti Dharani will take care of getting you a copy. So we'll be a little more prepared tomorrow. The discussion, I'm not going to give you a homework assignment or a quiz question or anything like that. It will help you to understand the topic if you have gone through the book. We'll probably have more questions if you've gone through the book too. I'm here just to serve you. I don't, you know, don't want to make you all uncomfortable. Oh no, here we go, back to school. I did that already. I don't want to go to school. It's bhakti. It's to awaken, to take our elevated acharya's message and try to assimilate the message and grow, spiritually grow in their association. Okay, see the Prabhupada, he...
This is from Gornitai Deities